ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Why did Matthew Flinders write such saucy letters to his best friend, George Bass?
Who really chopped off Chopper's ears?
And why did they name a swimming pool after an Australian Prime Minister who drowned?
I mean, why didn't they just use Harry Holt's high school nickname, Puss? These are the kind of historical questions we'll be asking on The Dead Can't Sue.
Search The Dead Can't Sue podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
The inflation figures for the quarter have landed, and it's better news than what most economists were expecting, and welcome news for households and the government alike. Headline inflation cooled and underlying inflation remains stable. It's still above the RBA's target band, though. So what will it mean for the central bank's August cash rate decision? Meanwhile, integrity in politics is back in the spotlight with questions raised across the political spectrum. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Karvelas.
And I'm David Spears.
And David, great to speak to you because inflation figures have just landed for the quarter. Inflation cooled from 4 to 3.8%, while the trimmed mean was unchanged at 3.6%. Now, the reason it kind of matters, well, it always matters, but economists had been tipping annual inflation to remain at 4.1% in June. So, you know, there'd be a sort of sigh of a little bit of relief. Not too much, but a little bit of relief from the government.
Look, I don't think anyone will rush out and pop the champagne corks or get an even bigger mortgage necessarily, PK. But yeah, this is better news than perhaps the markets were expecting. It takes some pressure off the Reserve Bank. So expectations of another rate rise when they meet in, what, about 11 or 12 days, those expectations of another rate rise have eased a little. So the market expectations are down. The share market has gone up to about a five-month high. So there's some positivity on the back of these figures out there. You went through the main numbers there. It's that headline rate coming off, but the underlying rate, more importantly, staying at 3.6, it's still way above where it needs to be. That's why the champagne corks are staying bottled, because it needs to be in that 2 to 3% target zone. It's still got a fair way to come back down, but the fact that it is heading in the right direction, I suppose, is the good news here.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's all, you know, pointing to rates being held and, you know, people are obviously very worried about interest rates and the potential for them to go up. It's interesting kind of to note then in this context, if we can, the speech by the governor of the Reserve Bank. And the title of that speech, which has been much talked about, was Monetary Policy in an Era of Shocks. And boy, oh boy, we are in an era of shocks, lots of shocks. That's been the story of our times. The speech compared the oil shocks of the 1970s to today's waves, and the governor suggested the world was more shock-prone in recent years. Okay, that's a point the government's been making too, and anyone can see it's bleedingly obvious. But she said the impact of recent oil shocks so far have been smaller than initially feared, which is interesting. What do you make of the framing around this? Has it been kind of a bit of an analysis of what she's really trying to say?
Well, I think there are a couple of points here. And yeah, this speech from the Reserve Bank governor came yesterday, so ahead of the inflation figures that have now dropped. But a couple of things I think Michelle Bullock was clearly trying to do. One, that, you know, job may not be over. Yes, for three rate rises earlier this year are being felt, hurting a lot of people out there, but we might have to go again if we can't get that demand down, can't get that inflation down. We might have to do it again, was the warning from Michelle Bullock. I think the other point is the broader point where she's pointing to productivity or the lack of productivity. Persistently weak productivity growth, she says, has weighed on real incomes and growth for many years. We know that. We've known this for a while, PK, but there's the Reserve Bank governor reminding very publicly again that this remains a formidable challenge for Australia, that more needs to be done on productivity. Why? Because as the old saying goes, you know, productivity may not be everything, but in the end, it's almost everything. If we can't get that productivity up, then, you know, whenever we do start to see a bit of economic growth, prices are going to shoot up again. We don't have the capacity to absorb that higher growth rate in the economy. The Treasurer knows this. He'll point to the measures in the budget, but, you know, clearly more needs to be done on productivity, and the Reserve Bank Governor making that clear. I mean, look, the figures today, yes, take some of that pressure off in terms of the next interest rate decision that's coming on the 10th or 11th of August. But has cost of living gone away as a problem, PK, politically? No. Mm-mm. I mean, look at today's figures. The big movers in the prices, housing prices still up 6.8%. A lot of that's rent, but other housing costs as well, building costs and so on. Food and non-alcoholic beverages were the next biggest contributor, up 3.3%. These are what are called inelastic things. You've got to pay for housing. You've got to pay for food. Recreation costs came off. They were one of the few areas that came off, but that's more of a disposable area. So people are feeling still that cost of living pressure. I don't know, PK, I think it might make the government's task a little easier in ending the fuel excise relief at the end of this week. If we'd seen another jump in inflation, that would have been harder. But it still does have this baggage of cost of living pressures to deal with that's fueling the rise of One Nation and a lot of the problems the government's facing in the polls.
Yeah, because it's a slow burn. The thing about inflation and why it's almost a society killer is it kind of builds and builds and builds, and then prices never go down again. You know what I mean?
They don't go down. No, it's about whether the growth rate will ease. And that's what we're starting to see, which is good, but it's got to get down a fair way yet.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, just on the fuel excise, which is about to come off. And they're already tapering it down, but they could have kept the tapered down for longer. They didn't, or they haven't told us they will. There hasn't been a lot of pressure really on them to do that from the opposition, though, which I thought was interesting.
No, and look, prices aren't what they were before Easter. I know the oil price, certainly about a week ago, had jumped back over $100 a barrel, but the Bowser price has not jumped back up to where it was here. Why is that? I guess it's got a lot to do with the hoarding that was going on, all the jerry cans being filled up and so on. That demand was really pushing that price at the pump through the roof back then. That isn't the case now. The government, as you know, we've noted before, has done a lot of work to try and, you know, and at expense to the budget, secure supply. I guess, yeah, it doesn't, I think you're right, doesn't have that pressure there to continue, and certainly not from the opposition, to continue this excise relief. I suspect, though, if, you know, in a month or two, this war's still dragging on, things get worse, the price goes back up again, it's still got the options to go back there, but it's expensive. It would rather not.
It would rather not. And if there's not sort of the direct political pressure to do it in terms of calls for it, like in the past, then, you know, that makes it even less likely. Look, I want to pivot, if we can, to there's something unusual that's happened. Let's just put it under the topic, you know, integrity broadly, but then specifically the first example where integrity is back in the political spotlight, if you like, Angus Taylor being mentioned in New South Wales's Independent Commission Against Corruption proceedings this week. Now, to be clear, he is not accused of any wrongdoing, but ICAC heard claims that senior Liberal figures discussed seeking financial backing for a right-wing factional group, Reformers, from Taylor. Now, Taylor today was peppered with questions on this. Just want to give you the backstory too. Like yesterday when this broke, on Afternoon Briefing, I asked my panel, Labor and Liberal, even Andrew Lee, the Labor person, didn't want to get into it. So there's a lot of sensitivities around this. It wasn't like everyone was kicking this hard because of all of the caveats I've already placed on this story, right? Today was peppered with questions, and he clarified that no payment was made to the group. He said he wouldn't provide a running commentary, though, on proceedings. Labor frontbencher, and, you know, he plays the role of attack dog, it's fair to say, Murray Watt, was trying to land some blows on the opposition leader over this, even though, you know, the more sort of careful Andrew Lee yesterday was less prepared to just go there because of just the mention.
He's not what you call the attack dog, Andrew Lee, is he?
No. I actually gave the answer that I think was the fairest answer I've heard, which is, well, it's before the thing, it's not appropriate. And I was like, yeah, that's the way the world should work, right? But today we saw a little bit of putting a bit of GST and spice on it from Murray Watt. Thoughts from you?
Got a few thoughts. So I know a lot of these ICAC stories can get a bit complicated and murky with the various figures you've never heard of who were once a staffer in the Liberal Party and sit in some sub-faction that's alleged to be up to no good and also happen to work for Catholic schools and so on. But ICAC, remember, PK, the New South Wales anti-corruption body, has been a political graveyard for many on both sides of politics over many years. So what happens there, everyone in politics will be watching very carefully, particularly when Angus Taylor's name gets made. You're right to point out he has not been called to give evidence. He has not been brought into it that directly. But what we did hear yesterday was that this sub-faction, this conservative, this right-wing sub-faction in the New South Wales Libs, calling themselves the Reformers, who are alleged to have been involved in branch stacking and connections to a developer and so on, that they had this chat group where they talked about a shakedown of Angus Taylor to get some money out of him for their activities. And there were messages about trying to seek a commitment from him to inject $15,000, followed by monthly payments of $3,000. So he's asked about it today, Angus Taylor. He didn't look particularly comfortable, I think it's fair to say, but stuck to a careful set of words, said no payments were made, no payments were made, no payments were made, as he copped a dozen questions on this. But beyond that, he's not going to give a running commentary. So we don't know whether he was asked for the money. We don't know whether he thought about it. We don't know if he knew what this sub-faction group was up to and their alleged branch stacking and so on. There's a lot we don't know. He's not going to give a running commentary. He has not been called before ICAC, but he simply wanted to say no payments were made. I thought it was a very careful choice of word. I can tell you Labor thinks there's still more to come on all of this, but on the face of it, if no payments were made, maybe he's done nothing wrong, but did he know what this group was up to? Did he have further involvement with them? I guess they're outstanding questions, aren't they?
They are. But yes, you're right. The framing was very specific, wasn't it? Doesn't preclude. I'm not saying it did happen, but that he wasn't asked, didn't contemplate it. Like all of this, you know what I mean? But he's saying no evidence. So, okay, you know, you would assume that you wouldn't say that part very definitively unless you're sure that there is no evidence that will emerge. But either way, you don't want to be mentioned in ICAC.
No,
you're
you don't.
The opposition leader. Like that's, yeah, no
and how
way.
Many times have we seen, you know, the famous ICAC move of, you know, getting someone in the witness box, and we're not talking about this with Angus Taylor here, but someone is in the witness box denying something and then, well, how do you explain this? And out comes the smoking gun, you know, a bit of evidence that they've acquired with a phone tap or whatever. And that's where political careers explode. Look, Angus Taylor wouldn't have said that, you know, no payments were made, unless he was checked and pretty confident, I suspect, in saying that. So we'll see where it goes at ICAC. Further evidence is happening today.
It is. And, of course, ICAC, unlike our IBAC here in Victoria, all plays out publicly. Some people, particularly I think people more of the right of politics, absolutely hate it.
Well, this is why, remember, with the NAC, the National Anti-Corruption Commission, this whole argument from the Liberals at the time, from Scott Morrison and so on, was we don't want the New South Wales ICAC kangaroo court where careers are destroyed for no good reason. So, yeah, our career is going to be destroyed through this current ICAC process, we'll see. But if New South Wales Catholic schools' money, the fees parents pay, the taxes that we all contribute to Catholic schools have been used to help, you know, support branch stacking from a sub-faction in the Liberal Party, that matters. That ain't nothing.
It totally matters. Okay, so that's integrity issue number one. Mm. Now I move to integrity issue number two. The Prime Minister attending a dinner in a Point Piper mansion hosted by a 25-year-old Felix Lee, to be 25 and be able to put on your mansion spread for the PM. Imagine life. What an alternative reality for that. He is part of a billionaire family with his father facing allegations of tax office deception. David, I will ask you in the most clear way. You had the Prime Minister on Insiders at the end of the Labor Party conference where you and I shared many snacks. Not enough snacks, actually. That's the real story.
Yeah,
that's another story.
Lack of food.
There were not enough snacks there. You asked, as you should, and then you asked, then you asked, and I don't know. It wasn't like loving the answer.
No.
Because I don't think it was very good. It wasn't a good answer.
Gave it a crack.
Firstly, did you attend a dinner at the home of Felix Lee in Point Piper?
Oh, look, I attend lots of functions.
What about this one?
I attend lots of functions in lots of places, including last night right here.
What about this dinner at Point Piper?
I attend lots of functions in lots of places.
Why don't you want to answer that?
Well, I do. You've just said that that occurred. You know, that's fine. I attend lots of dinners.
Didn't get a lot of information from the Prime Minister about the dinner, only that he attends lots of dinners. And that he wasn't aware of those issues was another of the answers in relation to this is the father of the host of this dinner or the where the house where the dinner was held, and tax office concerns about money being funneled from China into Australia, whether any red flags basically should have been raised and whether this should have been looked into more carefully by Labor before the Prime Minister sits down. So, no, we didn't get a lot of sunlight, I don't think, on all that happened there and what money was raised
and
so on. Well,
he said lots of dinners. He goes to lots of dinners.
Which is,
I want to know all about them.
Yeah, give us the list. Give us the list.
Look, when he said that, I'm like, yeah, which other ones would you like to share?
And look, he does go to lots of dinners. I mean, any person in his position would. I guess it's the fundraising element of this and, you know, the old story of cash for access and where's the money coming from and what's it trying to achieve? All of those are legitimate questions to ask. And no, we didn't get a lot of information in that exchange. And you can see why the Libs are still asking a lot of questions about this, right?
Yeah, of course, of course. And so then the Prime Minister did finally speak when asked again after your interrogation. I made it sound so dramatic, but, you know, reasonable questions, actually. But then he was asked again and he kind of provided a little more clarity the other day about the sort of donation, and he kind of had a go at the AFR as well, who published it first.
Yeah, I think, well, it was first in the AFR. The Sydney Morning Herald then suggested there was a, you know, the dinner had raised about $1 million for the ALP. Yes. That was then walked back and it was suggested that it was 10 grand a head, so less than 100 grand. Or hey, look, we don't know exactly how much was raised, but apparently not in the $1 million category.
Right. So his point is that the number of how much was raised was over-egged, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. I mean, that's a point to make, but even if it's tens of thousands of dollars, is it important to know where that's coming from and that it's, yeah, look, you know, apparently this young man is independently quite successful, clever, but look, you know, obviously there's family money involved. So, yeah, look, we just don't know a lot here, right? And I think for many voters out there, they'd love a lot more transparency around these things. And, you know, yes, we'll see disclosures in the normal way, as they say, which won't be until next year.
I love the normal way.
And look,
I always want to yell, maybe we don't like the normal way.
Well, the normal way is changing, and that'll change from next year, where we do get more up-to-date information and a lot more transparency around donations. But the system we've currently got, yeah, we won't see that disclosed for a little while yet.
No, that's right. Okay, so that's integrity number two. Now I have integrity number three for you. Pauline Hanson has declared Gina Rinehart paid for her London to Sicily flights and for her to attend the Dolce & Gabbana fashion show. She said that was a one-off experience and she won't do it again. Not that into fashion. She personally paid for her accommodation, though, meals and daily expenses, so fed herself, good. She's put this, she's like, this is in her disclosure. You know, you put in your forms and into the parliament and say, yep, I did this. So what? She ticked that off. I mean, yeah, she's been transparent, I suppose.
Yep, she's updated the register and, you know, fairly promptly, really, given this only happened, a couple of weeks ago. I think it's the flight from London to Sicily and back to London because she'd gone over to London for the Conservative conference she was at. But it's the side trip to Sicily that Gina Rinehart paid for. And the accommodation, as you point out, it's the Grand Hotel San Pietro that Pauline Hanson covered herself along with the meals and so on. So, look, it's just another example, isn't it, of Gina Rinehart contributing to the party, but also personally to Pauline Hanson, to her travel, the Dolce & Gabbana show. I think the tickets were paid for. So it's, you know, all on top of the plane and everything else and the other flights domestically.
She's quite obviously, and I feel very confident saying this, one of her chief financial backers. And so she's disclosing it. That's good. So we can talk about it transparently because she said it transparently, but we can ask questions about, which I think is reasonable. Why would a billionaire want to buy all your stuff unless they thought there was something in it for them?
And that's the question sitting over every one of these issues, right? Whether it's a private dinner in a Sydney Harbourside mansion, and what's the money? What are they hoping to get in return? Gina Rinehart with the travel for Pauline Hanson, the plane, everything. What are they hoping to get in return? You ask One Nation this question, they'll say, "Well, we just agree. There's no specific, but you can see Labor already trying to weaponize this closeness between Gina Rinehart and One Nation to suggest that it's the age-old story on the conservative side of politics of the billionaires wanting political influence once upon a time through the Liberal Party, but now through One Nation."
Yeah. Doesn't it speak volumes, though, that we have just gone through now what are the three major players in politics? I mean, there's the Greens as well, but a bit more minor, but still, okay. Three major players, and all of them with integrity questions. I think that does sort of speak to, you know, why sometimes we see the public so frustrated with modern politics.
Yeah, just on that, I mean, how much does this matter, do you think, to voters, PK, this integrity question? I mean, we care about it. We want the transparency as journalists. We're always hungry to see that sort of information revealed. Are voters, is this one of the reasons why they've turned off the major parties? And, you know, given Pauline Hanson's, you know, hardly immune from putting the hand out and accepting the largesse, is she going to now be in the same category as the others?
I reckon voters will increasingly, this is the thing about when you become a serious political player, as you know, David, you know, from being outsider, you quickly start being insider and you get sort of the same reaction from the public. Now, she hasn't yet been in charge of anything so that she can disappoint anyone. It's only when you're in charge that you inevitably disappoint, which is why I think all parties of government end up pissing people off, because you have to make some tough decisions. So she's not there yet, but she's increasingly inching towards being there, right? And that's going to be an issue for her.
Yeah, yeah. And I would suggest that donations that go to the Labor Party, right, the Prime Minister might be the one out there going to dinners and so on, but the money's not going to him personally, it's going to the Labor Party to help in their campaigning. Compared to what we're talking about here, flights to Sicily from a billionaire so that you can go to a resort, she paid for the resort, but the flights, the tickets to the fashion show, if a Labor or a Liberal leader or a Nationals leader had accepted that sort of gift, it's not a great look. Would they get away with it?
It's
even
not
if they
a great
disclosed
look.
It?
So what she's trying to do, which I think is an interesting strategy, I don't know if it'll work, but it's too early, but what she's trying to do by just disclosing it is kind of own the Gina relationship.
Yeah.
And I find that interesting as a play. I think it's the only thing she can do, by the way, which is lean into it, talk about how they share the same worldview, which they clearly do. You know, got a lot in common. They've become friends. She's a good confidant.
And
just
PK, they're saving the taxpayer. They're saving the taxpayer. That's the line we keep getting, isn't it?
You know, that line does resonate with some people, though. You know, whenever you hear about what the solution to some of these donations and deals are, right, which is, of course, more taxpayer money, not everyone's a great fan of that necessarily. So it's kind of vexed. It's not like you can just solve it, magic it up with just public funding entirely and everyone will be fine about that. I just think that the public kind of thinks we don't want to do that either. So
yeah, I don't know. I think maybe I'm too old school on this, but the idea that a billionaire is going to pay for political leaders to go and have a holiday in Sicily is, yeah, problematic.
It's definitely problematic. But then why would a billionaire want to give money to the Australian Labor Party or the Liberal Party either, which they also do? Well, obviously to, you know, attempt to get a seat at the table, so to speak, sometimes to influence government decision making. Now, I've seen governments take donations and then introduce policies, and Labor's done this many times, to be fair to them, that are not in favour of whatever said business, right? So I've seen them do the opposite of what that business might like. You've seen it too. So I don't think it always means 1 + 1 = 2, because that means they do everything that, you know, insert company.
It's a good point, right? Because some of the Labor types at the conference last week would point out that all these businesses are lining up, you know, contributing to their various Labor Party fundraising vehicles and so on, and then getting nothing. Getting nothing pro-business in return. So, yeah, they don't always get what they – but it's getting that access, I suppose.
And, yeah.
That's
important. Ordinary people, and that's where you get the sort of ordinary people anger. And lots of ordinary people listening to this pod go, well, yeah, I haven't got anything to put my hand in my pocket to try and give Labor a donation and get myself a dinner with the Prime Minister, or to, I haven't got enough money to fly Pauline anywhere, you know. So, yeah. And what does that change? Right, that's just, I think, an issue. Just finally, before we wrap up, I just want to mention, and, you know, this is kind of like not on the agenda items of today. You know, I'll tell you how the sausage is made. Our beautiful producer, Lara, you know, comes up with the ideas we're going to talk about for the day. There is endless news. We have to make choices, my friends. So this wasn't on the list, but I'm putting it on anyway because I'm renegade. And that is, you know, Victorian politics. The last couple of pod episodes, we have focused on it. Ben Carroll is now the Premier for Victoria. Labor's in a bit of a hot mess. What I think is interesting, watch that space, because it has federal implications, and I know you will have views, is something which I don't want to bore you, and it's boring for normal people, any infrastructure projects, sorry, they're boring, but the suburban rail loop. Now, this is very expensive, very contentious in Victoria, very politicised, part of that big build kind of stuff, a lot of money, money, which the state clearly doesn't have, being committed to it. Ben Carroll is kind of, he's kind of letting enough people speculate on whether he might do something in that space. He hasn't said he would, but he's allowing us. Why I think it's watch that space is the federal government has given money to the suburban rail loop, right? The Commonwealth, Anthony Albanese. How does that work out, David? Like, I just think that's fascinating. Like, what? And if they do depart from it, we know the Libs want to if they get elected. Like, what happens? It's so confusing.
I think this is something that Ben Carroll is going to have to work out through his cabinet processes that he says he'll use to answer this question very quickly. I don't think, you know, he can let this one linger for too long. You're right. The federal government has poured in a fair chunk of money, including in the recent budget when they decided to halt the Inland Rail project, a queue outrage from the Nationals, but instead put money, more money into the suburban rail loop in Melbourne. It's a $34.5 billion project and counting. It has become highly politically contested. So, yes, if he were to scale it back, I don't think we're talking about ditching it altogether, but to rein in the scale of this project, that would have implications federally for the money that's being committed, you would think. So whether that gets redirected into other projects, I just think, yeah, that is something that'll have to be worked out soon. It's also a rail loop that is going to go through some, highly politically contested seats at the November election in Victoria as well. I think that's just, look, it is one of the pressing issues to come out of this. Then there's the Royal Commission. Does that get up and going before the state election? And does Jacinta Allen, does Ben Carroll get called before it? How quickly is he going to move on that? And look, can the party in Victoria come back together after a pretty messy few days on this, the split in the left faction in particular? There's still some bad blood over that, and that will remain for some time. I'm told this isn't going to bleed over into the federal caucus, that they're all okay with what's happened there, but yeah, they're looking at each other in the left faction in Victoria, given the split there, with some suspicion and wondering whether there'll be any, issues that arise now to damage Ben Carroll, given the way this all came about. So it's a bit of a watch this space as well. It may have been a necessary change, but these transactions are never without cost, PK, as you well know over many years watching these things. So, I'm not sure if the new Premier should expect a clean run from here to the election.
No. Well, I mean, the shouting in that caucus meeting spoke volumes, I think. Usually you zip it, at least when you know there are a gazillion journalists outside the door, but apparently they didn't have that discipline. That should give you all of the information you need. Well, that's it for Politics Now today. David, as usual, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, PK.
I hear you already have a guest for Insiders on Background. Have you got?
Yes, talking to Paul Kelly, editor-at-large of the Australian newspaper. His book came out a couple of weeks ago, but we've been busy with a few things, so I'm really excited about always sitting down and talking to the great Paul Kelly about his book on the Abbott, Turnbull, Morrison years and how Australia has changed politically over that period. It's a fascinating read.
He has so much longevity. We've both worked with him. He's a very smart man. I can't wait to listen to it on my Saturday walk. So thank you. Tomorrow, Tom Crowley will join Fran and I for the party room to wrap up a big political week. And if you have a question for us, please send a short voice note to the party room at abc.net.au. See you, David.
See you, PK.